This is Philip Herdwood, voiceover artist, writer, and Renaissance man, congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Okay, it's the Midweek Drive continuing its joy through the world of podcasts in this particular instance, because there have been one or two challenges with respect to the Siren radio transmitter. But don't worry about that, because if you're tuned in via sirenonline.co.uk or indeed sasabroadcasting.podbean.com, which you should be, then the magic of the Midweek Drive will continue. Isn't that right, Anna Lewis?
Absolutely.
Yay. Absolutely. Exactly. It's been a day and a half from my own point of view, Anna, because I started off in Lincoln this morning, actually just outside Newark, drove all the way to York to cover the York Maze. Pre-Yorkshire Day, of course, because I know as a good citizen of Jersey, you'll be very excited that tomorrow, August the 1st, is Yorkshire Day.
Ooh, whoopie-doo.
And as you may well recall, when we were undergraduates back in the day, I always believe in the importance and significance of the flat cap. I maintain it's my northern roots are being demonstrated throughout the globe, really, and doesn't matter whether you're in Strawberry Hill or indeed Lincoln or indeed any particular world, a flat cap is an essential part of Ibagum and go to the foot of our stairs and such like, which is great. I put it down to my kind of medieval guide to practical magic. Which is there a wind that's blowing there? Is there a gust? Where are you today, Anna Lewis?
Oh, I'm in the delightful part of the area called Surbiton at a garden centre, admiring all the chalets.
And here we are. I can actually, because we've got a bit of time, in essence, to actually sort of chill out, because it's just the two of us, because I think the other Midweek Drivettes didn't realise the thing was actually happening. It's all right. It continues ever onwards, as it will tomorrow with the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. But Surbiton, of course, used to be home to a young man called Stephen Butterworth.
Oh, my word. I didn't remember that.
Well, you see, I've just shared that with you. To the globe in question, to Penny in Derbyshire, to any of the, to Robin, of course, in Wales, any of the podcast listeners, that's pretty much meaningless, you know. But to those of us who were there in the 80s, the name Stephen Butterworth and the Chemistry Society, for which I haven't actually thanked you for sharing those photographs, Anna, don't we look so old then? You know, we look frightfully old, I feel. I mean, thankfully we've got a lot younger since those has been concerned, and we've kind of become much more rejuvenated. But that particular shot of the Chemistry Society, I have actually got a couple more, which I've never actually shared, but I think they're slightly better. I mean, I must admit, from my own point of view, I'm thinking, I don't know. Anyway, what about this medieval guide to practical magic? Why did you decide to share this 4 hours ago?
Yes, well, it's the sort of thing that I have a very arcane interest in, and I just thought that it's important for everybody to appreciate that things that grow in the garden, for example, were treated as herbal medicinal remedies and had supernatural powers and things like that. So, yes, lots of thinking about it.
It's proof that it works, Anna, because just by using that guide to medieval magic, we've magicked up Fergus Jeffs. Yay, Fergus! you see, Fergus, it may well be that the frequency modulated 107.3 signal is, for various reasons, not functioning, but our podcasts continue, you see, and the midweek drive still there. You know,
good.
The power of Anna in that sort of point of view. As I was saying, Anna, started off today driving up to the York Maze. Emma Street will tell you more about that because she was assisting on that. We went through the House of Corn Fusion. See what it did there. In fact, the House of Even More Corn Fusion. We had a look at the pig racing. I actually had a yellow daub of paint put on my snout to actually support the pig racing. Yeah, pig racing.
Wow.
Who would have thought it? You will see evidence on the social media. I just haven't had a chance to actually upload them as yet. But in the next 24 hours, you know, feel free to like, dislike, share, whatever. And then, of course, we drove all the way back. We did 2 hours with Nick Elliott and his sound and Nick's vision. And here we are doing the midweek drive. So, you know, just juggling those things around. It's been a hectic time. But you're here. The world is good. And the fact that you're in Surbiton, which, of course, is also the setting for The Good Life.
Oh, is it? Well, you taught me something today. I didn't realise that, to be honest. But there you go.
Yeah, yes, Tom and Barbara Good in a show which was way before Fergus was even born.
I remember growing up with it, though. I remember when they used to show the old episodes of BBC Two, the Christmas special.
Exactly. I mean, Penelope Keith, Felicity Kendall, who apparently has Botox, but she sees it perfectly natural these days. It's all right, Felicity. Once voted actress with the best rear end, which you probably have lots of sorts of sexist sort of PC scenarios on that if you chose that today. And, of course, Richard Briers was also there. In a show which effectively was green before its time, I think, Anna. Do you remember The Good Life?
It was, about recycling and sort of having this compost heap at the end of your garden growing all your vegetables. And, yeah, it was good. I remember it well.
And these days, of course, we take it as, you know, just a thing that's going to happen. What's coming up in the podcast? Well, William Coles, he's been busy as well today. He could have joined us at the York Maze, but no, he said. He was walking in Yorkshire. Walking in Yorkshire ahead of Yorkshire Day. I was walking and the fool, the insanity. I mean, the rain was just intense from that point of view. But he'll be joining us, I think, from either Whitby or Scarborough. One of the two in a few moments' time. We've got Miranda O. That's Miranda O. O-H. Who is a wonderful author who has just put together a whole new book. Which I'm doing my kind of build myself up with this. Oh, it's a podcast. I can actually say that her book is called Chest Up. No, let me rephrase it. It's called Chin Up, Tits Out. I know, I'm secretly shocked. But that's what Miranda will be talking to us about all the way from Middle America. Zoe Jameson will be with us. Rachel Abbott will hopefully be connecting with us as well. As Paul Zollo, having recently reviewed Sir Paul McCartney, Robin Pearson, Phil Nis, all the greats. Anna, does that provide you with the sense of a packed show?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
So the next critical question that remains the same will be put to you, about the next two critical questions, by Fergus. Go!
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us
on this podcast? I certainly have. Thank you very much.
And will you be joining us on the next podcast, whether it goes out live or pre-recorded?
Oh, I would be very delighted. Thank you for the offer.
I like to feel that the Midweek Drive podcasts are recorded before a live audience. Good to know that even though we have one or two teeny issues with respect to the old frequency modulation side of things, that Robin Pierce can still actually upload his photograph saying he's watching the new superhero show The Boys on Amazon Prime with a whole heap of other wonderful stars. And Paul Mount, of course, TV critic for Starburst magazine, has also liked that as well. He says, very good. He's right about to launch episode 5. I've managed to reach episode I'm on 5 as well. I've done the first 4. It's a sad day, Ferg. It's a sad day indeed. When presenters and hosts of the Midweek Drive, with literally a quarter of an hour into the show, and we already start talking about binge watching on another media platform, etc., when obviously, as Bill Coles would actually say, there's no question about it. If you're going to binge listen, you should listen to all of my William Coles podcasts and contributions to the Midweek Drive. Isn't that right, William?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's the ultimate cure for insomnia.
Oh, the cutting harsh words there of the journalist who, instead of actually accompanying us, that would be Emma and myself, on the York Maze, glorious weather, and the house of even more corn fusion and pig racing and Jurassic Mazes and indeed the Lion King setup, decided, no, we're going to do a walk in Yorkshire instead. And Julie get wet as a result. So the gods were not happy with you making that decision, William Coles, being that close. That close.
No.
It's... Wow. But
Sorry.
But we,
I,
we,
I would have loved to have joined you, but you know, the coastline and the rain, it was calling to me.
Mm. Like the old sad story of Over the the Book to Sky, the Sky Boat song is what I was trying to actually work through there. No, I won't actually sing it. So what have you been doing in Scarborough and, of course, Whitby? And are you in Whitby or Scarborough at present, as opposed to being up in Edinburgh? And is this is this part of a land grab that you're setting up on behalf of our Scottish friends?
No, I'm merely walking a little bit of the Cleveland Way with my sons and a nephew and my brother. And we have walked a large chunk of Scarborough to Whitby there. We got fed up with the rain and the mist.
Yeah.
And eventually we got on a bus near Ravenscar. And now we are in Whitby, wandering through Whitby before we get to our the large room that we've rented.
Hmm. Well, it has to be said, Bill, that although we had spoken in previous weeks about your Facebook images of a game of croquet in the Suffolk countryside, I had a chance to actually do a little bit more perusing. And on July the 15th, a matter of weeks ago, of course, I see an image, showing this to Ferguson there, and the listener, of course, of your good self pretty much giving it some welly there in terms of, I mean, is this competitive dad or is this competitive dad, Fergus? He's got a few youngsters to one side, and you get this little line. Sometimes you get a family photo which is just so charming, so damned wholesome that you feel you have to share purely to rub your Facebook buddies' noses in the muck. Here with my excellent brother Toby, eager for another win at the school sports day. You can even see two of his sons in green eating his dust. Choke on it, kiddos. I can't see this as good child psychology approaches.
You didn't like it? Yes, well, that is my brother. He is very, very competitive. Not me, though. Not remotely.
I must admit, he looks very like you. Is he a twin brother?
No, he's a year younger than me.
Well, that says it all, then.
Yeah, it's based family resemblance.
I would have thought so for a moment, as you can tell. I actually thought it was Bill Kells himself.
I mean, if it were me, I'd be at the back of the race. I'd let the kiddies win. I couldn't care less.
Well, on that photo, it's like, I remember I used to go bowling with my family, and my mum always used to tell my dad to, you know, don't go too hard. And then he's doing his own style thing, and he's beating us to smithereens.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, I suspect he might be using the old line, a bit like in The Lion King, effectively, where he's kind of trying to demonstrate the challenges of life to people. But, you know, at the end of the day, surely we deserve better.
Well, on that Lion King setup you mentioned of the Yorkshire Maze, was it really there, or was it just CGI?
Good point, Fergus. You'll see when you join us at the York Maze, hopefully later in the year, and we'll set up a whole range of other factors. But the other big breaking news that I'll attest to, were you aware, Bill Coles, that ultimately, when it comes to our current political situation, it's kind of all been done before and actually predicted by a science fiction writer called Norman Spinrad?
No. What did Norman say?
What did Norman say? I mean, I tell you, what did Norman not say? But in his epic book, Agent of Chaos, published a couple of years before the current Prime Minister actually was born, he deals with, and this is a Rolling Stones comment, Spinrad is without doubt one of the best contemporary American novelists. He deals with a dystopian society that is actually sort of being launched into chaos by the lead character, who is indeed entitled Boris Johnson. So, okay. Boris Johnson. We have, I'll give you a little quote from the whole sequence here. Boris Johnson checked his watch. The television coverage should be just starting now, and any second Kustov would appear. There was a blare of recorded trumpets from the podium itself, and Vladimir Kustov, the hegemonic coordinator, appeared at the top of the steps, barely visible behind the screen of guards. Kustov marched slowly down the steps, screened always by the guards, as the notes of Nine Planets Forever, the hegemonic anthem, filled the air. Johnson had never seen Kustov in the flesh before, though of course his television image was all too familiar to everyone in the hegemony, though Johnson himself would not have cared to admit it. There was a curious resemblance between the hegemonic coordinator and himself, though a resemblance blurred by a 50-year age difference. Spooky or what? Twilight Zone or what? I put it to you, and you can purchase this online, check out Norman Spinrad, agent of chaos, and you might have to completely redraft the whole thoughts of, your own predictions, of course, in the wonderful remake of Dave Cameron's School Days, which, of course, is entitled...
It's now called Boris and Dave, Eton and Other Messes.
Exactly. Whereas Agent of Chaos is all about the great tyrant rules the solar system with absolute terror. Only one man dares to fight back, and that is indeed Battle Against the Hegemony, Boris Johnson. And written, as has been pointed out, a few years before Boris was even born.
It is different from saying The Simpsons did it.
Well,
I'm
going to have to buy it.
Yeah. Thanks. So, I'll work our way through that. We need to head off to speak to a romantic author called Miranda Oh. I'll say that again. Miranda Oh, who has indeed produced an awesome text, which, again, I'm sure you'd be quite... I'll try and get her to send an autographed copy of this. Apparently, segue into what is almost a contemporary Sex in the City, called Chin Up, Tits Out. Second time I've said it.
Can you ask her how near the knuckles she likes to go with her sex scene?
I suppose we could work that in. We can work that in. I mean, I've had a look. I've had a read of some of the things, and certainly the language is somewhat fruity. I wouldn't sort of say it's for an under 18 audience, but you know, it's Miranda Oh. She's very keen to step into H.M. Gooden's shoes, who was originally booked to do the author of the Rise of the Lights trilogy. But that's what can be happening. And at this moment in time, because there's really Fergus as the sole life form who's in the studio, apart from myself, and it's questionable with respect to myself in many ways. Would you like to have those two questions delivered to you, William, from Fergus?
Yes, I'd love them.
Okay, William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I have. Thank you so much. I mean, educational too.
Yeah, and will you be joining us again on the next show?
Yes, I'd love to. Thank you so much, Brooke.
How tantalising can you actually be? You are literally about an hour and 20 minutes away from the Lincoln Studio, you're about an hour and 15 minutes away from the James Cook University Hospital Studio, and you're tucked into that coastal base thing. Let us know in future. You know, let us know. We can have you...
All right. Yes, I'll give you some more notes.
Yeah, absolutely. And how else are we going to actually get live William Coles to the world?
Thank you.
What a wonderful, wonderful sound of Leanne Womack there with the slightly more dance remix version of I Hope You Dance, and quite rightly so. It could actually be the underlying theme to the soundtrack of the movie when it gets made, of course, of what we're referring to as CUTO. I know, we've said it once, we say it again, chin up, tits out. It's with the fabulous author extraordinaire who's making a debut on the production now. It's Miranda. Oh, how are you, Miranda?
Hi, I'm fantastic. How are you?
Excellent. Now, life is a wild ride. Sharing the twisted stories is what brings us together. Not my words, but your words from, of course, MirandaO.com. And here we are across the Atlantic, dealing with a variety of other bits and pieces. And yes, not so much sort of chin up, chest out, which, of course, will be gender neutral. You know, you've obviously gone for ornithologists amongst the worlds today. You've actually gone for chin up, tits out. Amazing. Yeah.
You know, and I do it because it's, you do you. We all do us. We whatever works for us, right? So chin up, tits out works for me.
Yeah.
And if it works for you, great. If chin up, chest out, if hold your head up high and shoulders back, if, you know, fake it till you make it, whatever that motto is, you find one and you use it and you run with it and it creates positivity.
Oh, I have to agree. Now, again, stories that bring you lots of laughter, some shock and a few tears. I must admit, yeah, I've read some of the early sort of drafts of the aforementioned CUTO. For any sensitive listeners there, you know, just sort of use the acronym CUTO.
And
I was intrigued to find that you also encourage alcoholic beverages when reading to enhance the reading experience.
Yes.
Would you recommend a particular sort of alcoholic beverage?
Well, you know, whatever floats your boat, really, really. You know, I sipped a lot of wine when I was creating the stories. And so if wine tickles your fancy, then for sure pop a bottle and make sure you keep it close to you so you can refill that throughout the book. I think it definitely adds a little twist and a little addition to your humor, right? So, life is a wild ride, and every now and then we need to find a release and escape from it every now and then. And if an alcoholic beverage helps you do that, then I would definitely suggest to sip on one when you're reading through the book.
Quotes from Sherry Garrity here. Miranda O delivers raw Hedley. I couldn't wait to dig into Hadley's next chapter. Where the first book in the series was all young love and hot romance, this one is what happens when the honeymoon is over. Within the next few pages, I was laughing out loud and sneaking a read at my desk. It is equal doses of hilarity and hope. I'm sensing a kind of new American attitude here, kind of can-do attitude, which, you know, we need in these bleak times. Whereabouts in the States are you, Miranda?
North of the States. I'm actually up in Canada, so prairies in Canada, right in the smack dab in the middle. I'm in Manitoba.
Which is why, of course, it's not America, it's Canada. I don't know why. Yeah. Week in, week out, we get these fabulous authors from Mickey, etc. For some reason, I keep thinking it must be North America. It's so I don't alienate any Mexicans.
It is technically North America.
Okay. Yeah. It is North America. We can go for that. We for sure can go with that. And I think that can-do attitude definitely goes both ways when it comes to that gung-ho attitude coming from Americans and Canadians. Mm-hmm. So we definitely have the same approach there, let's call it. So, you approach this as a piece of confidence no matter what life throws at you. Now, let's be honest. Are we always going to be confident when life throws us curveballs or twisters or, you know, the unexpected? No, we're not going to be confident. We're going to be head over feet, bajiggity, out of the sorts, not knowing what's right, what's wrong, or how to take the next step forward. And I found through my journey and through sharing these stories that if I held my head up a little bit higher and threw my shoulders back, you know, did a little kudo action, that I would feel a little bit more confident in the moment of insecurity. And it was something that my mom kind of coached me on growing up, and it evolved into this saying, right? Chin up and tits out, chin up, chest out. And it evolved to that. And now it's kind of our life motto. And I just enjoy sharing it with people through crazy life stories.
I'm just making a note, Miranda, of head over feet bejiggity, because I feel, you know, we should be working that into a kind of world government scenario, you know. Don't yes. go head over feet bejiggity, you know, vote for censor. I got to work on that. I'm also impressed, Miranda, that you know, you're putting into practice what you're talking about, because I'm fairly sure that on your website, of course, mirandao.com, mm-hmm. You've also got an image of yourself and a photograph of you, and video of yourself with some, I think, red wine in hand.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Yeah?
Like I said, there was just a little bit of yeah. wine. Just a tad, you know, consumed when I was writing the books. Mm. And so when it came to doing the promotional video, it only made sense to cheers to the readers and cheers to the fact that the second book was out. And we all got to be part of that launch, because it was a real exciting time to launch that book.
It makes perfect sense, even though the police are obviously sort of out the old door as we speak, really.
Yeah, no kidding. I tried to close my windows. Apparently there's a fire. I keep watching fire trucks go by. It's insane. Sorry about that, guys.
No, listen, you know, it happens. At the end of the day, it just shows what a hot property you are, Miranda.
I know. They're coming to cool me off.
Yeah, exactly. Either that or, I must admit, I mean, from the sort of the colour coordination, I have to say, folks, that's really great colour coordination, because you got the sort of the black blouse, you got the red, very dramatic red skirt there, you got the red sash, the sort of the scarlet sash, it has to be said, and of course you got the white sofa and settee. Yeah. Could be a nightmare if you'd ever spilt any of that red wine. But
that's what stain remover is for.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but ultimately, I think your control was well put together, because the way you actually use your I think right hand to gesticulate and actually sort of enforce the non-verbal communication, whilst the left hand is actually holding the glass of wine, that almost has to be seen to believed. Yeah. As a male, and I'm unable to multitask on that sort of level. You know, that's like the next stage up.
Oh yeah. You know, multitasking. I can sip wine, talk with my hands, and laugh all at the same time.
Good grief.
Without spilling.
There are Americans south of the border who would kill for that sort of ability. You know, instead they end up in daytime television. It's okay, you know. We just let it go.
Exactly. Yeah, we just stand and applaud, right? Just congratulations.
Exactly. So we've talked about, obviously, the relationship to Sex and the City, etc. Previous romantic novelist William Coles, who was actually just on from... He was in Whitby. I think he was on Whitby. Or did he say he was
Scarborough? Scarborough.
It was Scarborough. Right, okay. England. Scarborough, England, as opposed to any other part of the world. But he was saying he was very keen to kind of ask what we call a sort of baton-like question, where, you know, one of our interviewees, you'll get the whole podcast theme when you can look through this, but one of them actually puts a question, which we then actually will pass on, a bit like handing on the baton, etc. And his question basically, Miranda, was amazing. You know, that's just phenomenal. I mean, that just the sound of the aircraft that's flying across there. It's genius.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, apparently I did not pick a quiet place to be around on my lunch hour today.
It's okay. It's all right. It's in Manitoba, we're speaking
Manitoba,
to?
Yeah.
Manitoba.
Yes, Manitoba.
Nice to see that.
We have two seasons. We have winter and construction. Those are the two seasons that we have. So no matter where you are, whether you're in a building or you're outside, there's always construction going on.
Northern Hemisphere, we're quite clearly in construction. Makes sense. Anyway, William's question was, and I think I'm paraphrasing this, how near the knuckle do you get when it comes to describing the more, shall we say, physical of your trysts, your romantic trysts, and the adventures of the text, etc.?
I go into, let's say, my mom always told me that a lady never kisses and tells.
Yes, very good.
And the second thing she told me was sometimes less is more, to leave more
precisely.
To the imagination.
Precisely, yeah.
So definitely you see an evolution of the character throughout the three books.
Mm-hmm.
So when you meet Hadley, she's 18, and then when we roll into the third book, she's late 20s, so about a decade later. So you really see her passions and her desires evolve through her 20s, and it comes out in the writing and it comes out in the story. So, but those two definite life lessons that my mama taught me have been put through the book as well.
It's good to hear. Good to hear. We thought that was going to be the case, but you know, you never know. Yeah. Just wanted to.
You never know.
I'd hate to find a listener for this sort of thing. Yeah, it could be Penny in Derbyshire. She might, you know, this sort of attitude, the can-do attitude. She's actually there. She goes to pick up a copy of Chin Up, Tits Out, and suddenly she's shocked. You know, shocked. And you know that sometimes, you know, the British audience, we can get a little bit sensitive. I just thought, let's keep it going. It's been important. It's very, very, very good.
Yeah. Just keep it going, right? Like, all the parts don't last long. If you read in the review, all the good and the bad, it's all quick, very fast-paced. There's lots that happen.
I mean, there's so much. I almost had to have a lie down just after reading the introduction. It was amazing. You know?
That sort of
rapidity that was coming through us is just amazing. So great, and I don't think I'm even target audience, you know, as a you know, middle-aged man. It's not going to work, but still. I also have to ask the question: the surname OHO.
Yes.
Share with us.
It's a middle name, maiden name, married name. And so it's all kind of put into my pen name. So the OH is a combination of initials for me. I know. Yeah. I got to keep my life separate. I work into my books are very fun and passionate and comical, and I work in corporate finance. Yeah. So it's
which is passionate and fun and comical. Oh no, he's just gone down a totally different line. That's wonderful.
Oh yeah, it's structure, it's organized, it's format, it's process. And don't get me wrong, I love both my worlds, but I keep them separately so I can do both and enjoy both, because they tickle both. You know, I enjoy both.
Honest, Miranda, it's as we said earlier, in terms of you can actually have a video taken of you while sitting on a sofa with a bottle of a glass of wine in one hand. You know, you've got that ability. You know, there are others who have to compartmentalize. You know, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah, I know. On top of that, I'm an Airbnb host as well. So that's, well, I always have stories.
Not surprised. Miranda, it has been fantastic sharing some thoughts with yourself. We could literally actually open up a series just on Miranda's thoughts from Manitoba. In fact, Manitoba's Miranda.
Hey, yeah, let's do it.
And a reminder, you can go to find out more about Miranda's awesomely wonderful writing by going to mirandao.com. That's MIRANDA, as in the Miranda character from Sex and the City. OH, all one from upofview.com. Miranda, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
Oh, I've had a blast. Thank you so much for having me on. And it's wonderful to be part of this with you guys today.
Then in which case, will you be kind enough to join us again in the very near future? Will you come back?
A heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
If you ever put me down, I would fall right through the ground.
Never go.
still resonating with good Poptabulous goodness from the 1970s, the Partridge Family. If you ever go, David Kesty et al. Doing the whole system there. Okay, well, we haven't been able to get through to Zoe Jameson. They do so well, and then just when you think they're reliable. Never mind, we won't give up. She may be in an area of the country which is giving her sorts of challenges. She may be actually in deep veterinary work. Who knows from that point of view? But hopefully, fingers crossed, we will be able to speak to Rachel Abbott, who, of course, has coined so many delightful phrases the world over. She was responsible for such delightful deliveries as this particular epic.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe. From giant lizards.
Which, Fergus, I think is really critical to actually what we do on this show, because it's I often feel we don't fly that flag up, that if you're worried about giant lizards, and I might even be talking about Godzilla King of Monsters here, I may or may not, you know, we're there. Yeah. We've got your back. You know, we have that sorted.
I don't know. It'd be nice to have him in the studio once.
No, I mean, it's a thin line. You let the geckos in and suddenly you get all sorts of... The salamanders are there, and then they start increasing their size.
And is King Kong welcome?
He's not a lizard. He's not a lizard.
Yeah,
you know?
He's a monster.
Exactly. Yeah, but no, it's giant lizards. They're the ones you need to worry about.
Chasing old dreams, tired of wasting days, tired of waking mornings, just to wait for you to leave. Ooh, tired of searching high,
I want you.
Tired of getting low,
got behind you.
Tired of listening hard,
sometimes
just wait for you to know. Yeah.
I want you.
You
hey.
us, because when all's said and done, when will the telephone ring? When will we be waiting with the bated breath to actually see whether we can actually connect with the awesome soul of whom, quite literally, you just have to press the button here?
DuBarry's very own gnome of quality country wear. It's Zoe Jameson, back on the Midweek Drive.
Gnome of quality country wear, Zoe. Gnome of quality country wear. It's great. A little bit sad that Zoe has not downloaded the audio files I sent her, you know, in full WAV format. I got a line effectively saying audio files still have not been downloaded, so they're going to be deleted, so I might have to send them to you all over again, Zoe. You know, it's there for you to share and download with all your friends. Or not, it's the case.
Yeah, maybe. You have to do that. Yeah. I can find it.
It should have come through a thing called WeTransfer. Now, I suppose it could be it's ended up in the junk folder. It shouldn't have. Most people, when we say WeTransfer, they get it fairly solidly, fairly straightforwardly.
I went to look for that the other day, actually, and I couldn't find it, so I'll have another look for it.
I'll send it to you again, because it might have... The system we use tends to self-destruct after 7 days, effectively. It's just the way it is.
Gosh, you know?
So, no, it's quite a wrap. So, and even more, that's why you get an email saying when the files have been downloaded or when they haven't been downloaded, you see.
That's quite good. Yeah, I don't know. Technology's obviously not my strong
point. Oh, please. One of these days we'll get ourselves sorted. Listen, Zoe, we were at the York Maze earlier today. I was actually having on my snout because obviously I was channeling my inner pig here because we were observing pig races at the York Maze. I know, it's the day before Yorkshire Day. Yeah, we're very impressed. And within that whole field and scenario, I'm actually, via the medium of technology, not only whip out the camera, so to speak, and this is actually a special for Fergus. He can actually see an image of your friendly neighbourhood anchor person for the Midweek Drive, with indeed a little droplet of, actually you can hardly make it out there, but that's earlier today, with obviously there's a puppet pig in the background, and there is quite clearly a yellow nose there. That's because I actually selected yellow. I was unsuccessful. You know, that was the way that we actually... The successful pig, you had to sort of choose either red, yellow, blue. Sadly, it was the red pig that actually won, but never mind. That's another line entirely.
It was. I've seen pig racing before.
Well, you know, once again, another reason, Zoe, why you need to join us on one of our location reports.
How do they get them to race?
Excellent question. And they have a gentleman dressed up as a giant corn cob, sprinkling various things in front of them. And that acts as the sort of the trigger that they follow, like crazy, wild, whirling dervishes piglets. It's amazing, you know. Ooh, they whiz around in all sorts of ways. It's a bit like greyhound racing, but even more exciting, because it's a real life human being that's there. I know. So Emma's still recovering from actually meeting Colonel, because she was very concerned about the notion of people dressed in as a giant cob.
Colonel. Good names.
It is pretty. Prophetic in all sorts of ways, but still. Tomorrow, Zoe, it's Yorkshire Day. As a Northern Irish lass, you care? Will you be celebrating that? Oh, you say, of course, Yorkshire Day. I mean, I was up in Tyneside in Newcastle celebrating my brother's graduation recently. I'm going to love Yorkshire.
Yeah, Yorkshire's cool, isn't it?
I'd like to think so, particularly when it's pouring down with rain as it has been today, because it's a matter of course. What has the weather been with you, Zoe? I mean, did you manage to work your way through the game very effectively, or did the lightning come? Was it a case of, no, quick, get out more of those buckets of water and stand in them?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think we had all extremes at the game fair apart from snow, so every season was covered, we went through them. But yeah, it was a fun weekend.
We can clearly understand if you say, I don't want to talk about that, but I'm going to throw this question in any case because my journalism students will actually say, you need to ask that. Given that he's connected with the University of Lincoln and has been a guest speaker in one of our great live series, Chris Packham, who I gather was banned from the game fair, was there any discussion or challenge about that, or was it a case of nothing to do with me, says Zoe? Yeah, I would have had it in, but was there a problem about that?
I didn't have anything to do with that,
no. Thankfully. Yes. good to hear it, Zoe, but that's it. There's always a little bit of controversy that goes behind the scenes, and I think it was because of obviously Chris's views, which are fairly strong, it has to be said, about sports and countryside events and so on, that maybe he would have upset a few people, and I think there were suggestions that there might have been protests, etc. So did that float anybody? I mean, did it cross over? Was it a topic conversation, or was it a case of, frankly, we've got other DuBarry goods to sell?
We didn't actually hear about that, but I suppose we're quite isolated in our own little stand, so...
It's like you say isolated. I say cocooned in an oasis of quality. You know, that's the key thing. I mean, I'm waiting with bated breath for the press passes to come through from the point of view of the lights of Burley to actually sort of savour that quality again in terms of September and so on. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that'll be brilliant.
Well, it just comes around so quickly. It's amazing. What else do we actually have here? Lincoln Book Festival. We talked about that last week. I still had something completely different from that. Yes, you see, it's been a crazy week, Zoe. And how's the veterinary science going? How's that proceeding?
That's going okay. I was actually just collecting some data. I'm doing a research project at the minute as part of my degree, so I was actually just doing that when I missed your call. And then I was like, oh, help, better do that quickly.
You see, that, Fergus, is what you call the quality of a guaranteed first-class honours graduate, you see. She thinks about her media commitments at the same time. You know, I just sense it. You know, that's why we thought we'd come back to you. We'd work our way through that. Would you like to share with us what data you're collating and I mean, how much can we talk about what you're doing and so on?
So my project is equine-based, and it's a retrospective study on a disease called atypical myopathy. And so we're basically trying to gather data throughout the UK and see if we can link some clinical signs to some better prognosis for the disease, really.
And this is why higher education is good for the world, because it helps us to pursue that growth of knowledge and understanding which results in happiness for all of us. Zoe, you will always be our superhero. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this evening?
I have indeed.
Will you be coming back to join us in the very near future, let's say 7 days from now?
Yes, please. Yay. Thank you for having me.
Oh, babe, Zoe, this time it's a podcast exclusive for reasons which I shan't go into, but I know, it's just even more special. But we'll be up in the fullness of time, Zoe Jameson, or as we'd like to say, as you know, ZJ. ZJ is a DJ, and she knows what she plays. It's like God is a DJ, but, you know, just work on that. Lucky on the next one. It's awesome. We will be back with you in a week's time. Happy Yorkshire Day tomorrow, Zoe Jameson.
Thank you very much.
Personally, I would actually go for me and you and a dog named Bean.
Yeah.
I think so. Me and you and a dog named Bean. What do you think, Rachel? Do you think that would work? Me and you and a dog named Bean. Chuckling and a loving all the way. I think that would work. Rachel, welcome back. Companion of Bean. It's been far too long since you were last on the Midweek Drive. We have already shared the Keeping the World Safe from Giant Lizards ident, which is very important.
Oh my God.
There's also, of course...
Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast, and you're listening to Alex Levchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Awesome. And frankly, On Broadcast has never been the same since Rachel stopped doing her regular sort of connections. I say that quite categorically, you know. It's the, you know, the passion. That was a, Rachel even knew me. You know, she knew that when I was feeling a little bit, she'd send me a photograph of Bean, and that would cheer me up, guaranteed.
No.
You know, it's just there. Yeah. So how is she?
Oh, yeah, really good, thank you.
Good. And Bean?
She's great, Alex. She's here.
I hope so, because, I mean, obviously, Rachel, it's not a case of we're using you simply as a way to actually get to
you
Bean,
are.
But...
It's a sausage dog.
It's a Dachshund, Fergus.
Yeah.
What's its Instagram account, Rachel?
She's at Mini Bean Peach.
At Lily Bean Peach.
No, Mini.
Oh, Mini. Mini Bean.
Yeah,
Mini Bean Peach.
She's Insta famous. She's got more followers than...
Well, anything, really.
My friend. No. Not like that.
Yeah,
but
no.
She's getting there. She's got discount codes now, people.
Sorry, would you just like to run that by us again, Rachel? She's got a discount...
code.
A discount code.
What can the discount be used for?
Very kind to dogs. I don't know.
Yeah.
They contacted her and I thought, why not?
Well, precisely, Rachel, you know, if you're going to have a discount code, just go for it. I mean, that's clearly, yeah. Bean will be happy. And Bean, of course, and this is the time when you realise that, you know, Disney, what are you thinking? It's all very well doing a remake of The Lion King with Simba. But what about Bean, the three-legged Dachshund?
That would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
Oh, I think it's the way to go. I mean, I think the rights need to be signed up straight away, Rachel, and work needs to be put into action to make sure that's done dusted. So what have you been doing since you decided that the North was not for you? I don't understand why she could have joined us at the pig racing today at the York Maze. So, never mind.
Pig racing?
Yeah, I'll say that again, Rachel. Pig racing. You'll see the photographs on Facebook. I'll even tag you into to a couple of them just to actually sort of say, oh, that's what it's all about. We're Facebook friends and so on, which is always good. In fact, I'm sure it'll be a matter of time before we actually have Rachel and Alex Day, which is wonderful with Facebook, because you have such marvellous things on that basis, which is just truly wonderful. But in terms of the whole sort of sequence, what have you been getting up to, Rachel Francesca Abbott?
My full name. All kinds, really. All kinds of stuff. I podcasts. Trying to get podcasts commissioned.
Yeah.
Writing a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I've been doing a little bit of PR.
Mm-hmm.
Radio stuff, not actual PR. You know what I mean?
It's fair to say, Fergus, Rachel Francesca Abbott is the world's greatest PR, so her energy levels are just great.
Yeah, just no. I'm a radio person. I've helped a few things, but that's it. But why are you reading my full name out?
Because that's your Facebook name, and I thought, you know, it's just to raise the profile there.
You know?
I figured we need to sort of formalise the harmony. We've known each other for how many years now? It's time we actually sort of ramped it up a wee bit.
It's sweet. I know. It's sweet. But yeah, people are going to think I'm really pretentious.
Rachel, that's the last thing people would honestly think. Believe me,
we have actively,
and you know, because you set many of them up in times when you were working with On Broadcast, we have worked with people who probably give a whole new definition to the term pretentiousness. We've worked through that, haven't we? No names, but let's face it, when you're actually working your backside off, coordinating things, etc., and you get a request, say, "Ooh, I'm sorry, I asked for a frappe, not a latte." I mean, it's enough to make you scream, isn't it, really, on that basis?
Yeah.
I mean, we could, and when Rachel writes her memoirs entitled Rachel Francesca Abbott, My Life, which is great.
I can get a red book like the this is your life.
Oh, you're far, far, far too young to remember. This is your life.
I am not.
I think you are, but never mind. You obviously used it. You used YouTube. That's it. You know. So it's like
I'm 30.
Whoa. Wow, jab, jab. But Rachel, just because we're getting more chronologically gifted doesn't necessarily mean that we're losing the ability to sort of respond in all sorts of ways. And just in case you'd actually forgotten this thing, which we reminded Fergus of earlier, that the great thing about the Midweek Drive podcast on a weekly basis is...
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
Now that is what I call the quality I did. You know? So I think William Sitch wants to
do that. You scripted that.
Yeah. Well, I simply actually set up a line to sort of work through so that you could respond and develop.
I played with it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's called creative license. That's the important thing. It's very good. It works on that basis. So, Rachel, are we ever going to see you in the East Midlands? I know you've given up on the North. I don't know why, but still many people have, including Westminster.
I didn't know about a pig racing competition because I think Bean could be dressed up like a little pig.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go one stage further. Next year, I'm going to suggest that Bean could conceivably be a key entrant in Louis Savvy's Sci-Fido. Sci-Fido cosplay for canines. Every year in the Sci-Fi London Film Festival, usually held just outside Leicester Square, there is the opportunity for your... In fact, you can look this up online, Rachel, and see a whole range of things. I feel Bean could be a winner as a kind of Princess Leia, as anything really from that point of view, out of the sci-fi universe. So let's look upon that for May 2020, the opportunity to maybe introduce Bean to the Sci-Fido world. It's not hyper-competitive, but I think Bean would be an undoubted winner on that side of things.
Oh, yeah, I think she'd be well up for it.
Well, that's the kind of magic that will see us over to our next telephonic link, which is... Not to Canada. We've already been to Manitoba, which obviously was in Canada, but to Los Angeles and Paul Zolo, who was recently actually reviewing Sir Paul McCartney. That Paul McCartney, ex-Liverpool lad, band we may have heard of again, Rachel. Four lads from Liverpool, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George...
Exactly.
I know.
You're talking about the Quarrymen.
Of course, exactly. Sorted on there. And then we got our lead writer from Starburst magazine, and then back to Los Angeles after our little sojourn in Wales with Phil Leonis. Rachel, I feel as though you've never been away, and thank the Lord for that. I'm just so pleased that you triggered off by sharing on Facebook an image of Mr. Bean... Sorry, Bean. No, Mister. She's a female. Yeah exactly. Canine. Which I can't find, but, you know, it's all great from that point, to which I actually sort of responded. It's been high. In fact, my response was, high time, Bean, and your good self, return to the Midweek Drive. To which we get, yes! And then I immediately reply back, Wednesday, July the 31st, 6 p.m. And then she basically sort of forgets to check Facebook Messenger. So we actually have days when I think, oh, was it something else?
I know.
Wait, do you know, I think I've still got your email. We should have that. We'll talk about that. We'll get our people to speak to your people and vice versa, and we'll negotiate things on that point of view. Rachel, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us on the programme today? Has it helped with this grand thing we call living in London with a man in charge at 10 Downing Street who, frankly, we think, what's going on there?
I've had a great telephonic link, but I worry for my safety. Is that all right?
I think that's very profound. Profound, but not in a scary way, you know. It's because, Rachel, over the last 3 decades we've been doing this programme, we've never yet lost a Midweek Drivette, and you're one of the top Midweek Drivettes, so, you know, not going to worry about that sort of thing. So, is it
fair... Boris Johnson, obviously.
Exactly. I'm pleased you mentioned that. Yeah, it is. It's a strange and somewhat scary world. But we've been there. We've done through that. I've even sort of said, look, if he wants to come and actually speak to us, we might sort of listen in a kind of way. But let's be positive. Let's work our way through that whole process. So what's the final question, Fergus, we need to put to Rachel?
We'll be joining us again in the near future.
It's been a long day. It's been all sorts of things from that point of view. Yes, Rachel Abbott, Rachel Francesca Abbott, of course, will return. Because, frankly, the world has been waiting for you for far too long. Actually, you talked about podcasts, Rachel. Do you want to share with us any ways in which you'd like to promote? Do some self-publicity. What sort of things would you like to share with us from that perspective?
Oh, sorry, I've been sparking. What's I'm listening to?
And podcasts that you're working on.
I can't tell you the one I'm working on because we haven't signed off yet. But
okay.
You should definitely go and listen to one I'm listening to this week.
Mm.
And it is called Drunk Women Solve Crime. Or Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Genius.
Very funny. Very clever. I wish I came up with
Drunk Women Solving Crimes.
Yeah, they get drunk and they talk about, they solve crimes.
You know, this is what Miranda O. We should put these two folk in her. You know, it's all very well our Canadian author Miranda O. actually having a line which is chin up, tits out. But, you know, drunk women solving crimes, to me, is even better.
Well.
Anyway, that's taken us off on a whole new world, really. But maybe slightly inebriated women? No. Drunk women.
The first episode is Catherine Ryan.
Oh, she's very funny. Yeah. And she's Canadian as well.
Yes. You see, Fergus has got his finger on the pulse, if nothing else, from that point of view. It's been awesome. Rachel, take care. Keep on keeping on. And to Bean, woof, 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 woof. I think she knows what I'm saying.
And trust. shame and trust.
Classic case of rhetoric in action there. Steve Jones, Where Is the Love He's Lost? I don't know. Back in the day, 1980s, great TV themes in marvellous ways, but a great writer who has recently actually had a review of Sir Paul McCartney published in all sorts of wonderful ways, specifically in American Songwriter, is the amazing Paul Zollo. So your namesake, Paul McCartney, presumably he did the business, Paul, I gather.
Yes, indeed.
Mm. So, I mean, we've just Bruce Springsteen, 69, Sir Paul McCartney, well into his 70s. He's gone way past 64 at this particular stage. The magic is still there, and it still sort of galvanises it. And certainly from your review, it would seem that you know, the electricity that he was actually developing proves that fundamentally, if you've got the chops on the whole thing, you can continue long into the whole wonderful world of this thing we call ageing.
Yeah, well, he's in good shape, like Ringo. He's taking care of himself. Mm. He's vegan. To really work, because he is in great shape. He looks slender. But he also seems to be beyond that point where he needed to prove anything anymore. He just was happy to celebrate the great music, and he sang. He opened the whole show with one of John Lennon's songs, Hard Day's Night. Of course, a Beatles song, but John wrote it, as everyone knows. And that was so generous, and it just showed such a happy embrace of his legacy, where it seemed for, you know, in the past years, he really had to identify himself as Paul McCartney, separate from the lad. Mm. So it was beautiful. I frankly didn't know it was in Dodger Stadium, 50,000 people. I didn't know it could be that good. And it was better than ever. So it was really a beautiful night.
Which is absolutely fantastic. Fergus in the studio, you were recently watching the movie Yesterday and talking about that. I mean, because obviously, Fergus, you were around way, way after the Beatles had split up, the Wings had gone their ways and so on. But what is it about their legacy that appeals to yourself?
With the Beatles, it's when you see a boy band or any kind of band where they have any sort of fan base, any sort of band that's so popular that they get the word mania put after them as a suffix, you always think of the Beatles. Like with One Direction, you know, with other boy bands, we get the Screaming Girls and all that. It's never going to be as big as the Beatles had it, because I recently went through, just went on Wikipedia, looked through their discography, and just I have like a playlist on YouTube which is every album track they've ever done, just been.
And they didn't do a bad one.
No, it's there are no amazing. They are just it. Well, there's always going to be a couple like Obladi-Obladi, maybe.
Oh, I don't know. The first reggae song in many ways.
But there are so many incredible songs. You could have called them the greatest band ever, and you would not have many complaints.
Paul, you would clearly endorse that statement. I mean, is that something which we were fortunate enough, and indeed are fortunate enough, to still have two of the Fab Four present with us? And ultimately, is it a case of, as we look at the legacy, overused word, etc., that we see that, you know, the magic is there, and what they were producing was, whether you see McCartney and Lennon as being the equivalent to Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart or the Gilbert and Sullivan, yeah, whichever way you've thought of it, that it's this sort of magical way of using music as a universal language.
Yes, very much so. I mean, there has been mania in rock and roll, but nothing like what the Beatles did. Clearly Sinatra and then Elvis had mania, people going crazy, but the Beatles wrote their own material. They were not only the performers, they were the writers, and they were absolute geniuses of songwriting. Even their earliest songs have a musical sophistication on par with Cole Porter. A song like I Want to Hold Your Hand is much more complex harmonically than people might know, but it's fast, and they sing it so well you might not even notice, but musically it's quite sophisticated. And they did stuff with music that no one else did, and they sang it so beautifully. So it wasn't, and it looked great, obviously. They were just so cool and funny. But their voices and their harmonies and their musicianship, and then the level of their songwriting was just remarkable. And the other thing that's really exceptional is the Beatles wrote all those great songs from 1966 on, Sgt. Pepper and all the stuff that came after that, the White Album, Abbey Road, Let It Be, but they didn't perform except, you know, on the roof of Abbey Road. So nowadays, McCartney goes out and performs these songs that were never performed live, like, be, you know, for the benefit of Mr. Kite or the Abbey Road medley. And that is just thrilling because that is such genius writing. They hear it live, and considering we never heard it live, it really is special beyond anything else, I think, in the music world.
Well, I think with one of the biggest albums of all time, I think, is the Beatles' Greatest Hits. And obviously some people say, oh, here's all the number ones. With the Beatles, it's 25 tracks. And I think it's not just UK, it's US. It was worldwide, and the legacy of all of them, they all went on to have success in their own right. They all had successful, when you see bands where they split today and they, some try solo careers but they kind of fail, all of them were incredibly successful. Like George Harrison had his stuff with Ravi Shankar, and some of them worked together afterwards, because I think Ringo had a number one with It Don't Come Easy or something like that, and that was done with George Harrison, and then George Harrison and the Traveling Wilburys, and you had Wings. It's incredible, really.
Yeah, the same thing.
I agree.
The same thing can't really be said about the Spice Girls, but never mind, who knows? It's a different thought to you. Jerry tries. She does try. Let's take a musical break. I know we normally actually focus on a Laura and Ira track, various other things, but let's stay with Paul McCartney. Let's go for one of his updated versions, if that's okay. And I think one or two folk thought, oh, this is Paul McCartney doing his version of Give Peace a Chance. Well, actually, we need to do that in any case. So from one of his recent albums, Paul McCartney, People Want Peace, PWP.
With some trepidation, I crave your attention, but I'm not gonna let anything get in my way. The message is simple, it's straight from my heart, and I know that you've heard it before. But what does it matter? We're in it together, and I'm not quitting while people are crying for more. People want a simple release from their suffering. People want peace. People want
we do, and maybe we'll get it, and maybe the message needs to go out there. People do actually want peace. But did he play any of his new stuff at all, Paul, in terms of the conference, or was it all classics?
No, he did play new stuff, and he wove in even the Wing song, Letting Go, and Junior's Farm. So he wove in some unusual tracks, and yet he left out some of his own masterpieces. He didn't even do Yesterday. I mean, that's the most recorded song of all time in modern times.
Or Scrambled Eggs.
It shows the level of greatness that he could write Yesterday and not even do it. And frankly, we didn't miss it. It was such a beautiful concert.
Yeah. Did he do Long and Winding Road, one of my other favorites?
He did not.
Wow.
There's several like that. But once again, when you're Paul McCartney and you have that level of stuff, it's pretty amazing. And he chose several tracks that he'd rarely done, like Benefit of Mr. Kite from Sgt. Pepper, John's song. John never sang that. No one ever sang that one live. So he threw in a lot of unexpected things. And on some nights on the tour, I looked at the set list. He would switch it up. He did do Yesterday as an encore in other cities. But when he was in Los Angeles, instead of Yesterday, he sang the song Birthday, which he wrote with the Beatles. But talk about universal music. I mean, he's in his 70s, and there were young kids. I was with my son. And it was a universal feeling. That music touches everyone, regardless of age or where they're from. It's really miraculous. There's nothing really like it, I don't think, in the music world.
As I was saying to Fergus whilst we were listening to People Want Peace, we were fortunate enough, thanks to, of course, the wonderful R.W. Sanders, who, of course, put us in touch together, Paul, to actually do a feature with Louise Harrison, George's sister. And I think even there you get a sense of what historically was a really important part of both music history, about cultural history, and also about a better way that maybe, as I say, many of our politicians on both sides of the Atlantic could probably learn a lot from just some of the sentiments and the lines that are put together. Even though I'm sure people will actually turn around and say, oh, very simplistic or so. But, you know, it's important. It's important.
Yeah, I mean, the message of give peace a chance, all you need is love, that is simplistic. But sometimes simplicity is what matters. Like Pete Seeger said, any damn fool can be complicated, but it takes genius to be to attain simplicity. And especially in a 3-minute song, if you have a simple message, that's going to be more powerful. And let's face it, these songs have lasted. It's been more than 50 years since this music was created with the Beatles, and it sounds new still. It still sounds creative, and frankly, it gives me hope that songs still matter, because a lot of what I hear nowadays are interesting records. They sound good, but they're not songs. But Paul McCartney, John Lennon, they sat down, George, at an instrument and wrote great words and melody, and that's the essence of this great song, and nothing surpasses that.
Sage words indeed, Paul, and well worth accessing in all manner of ways. Of course, we're talking actually this very afternoon with a musician and indeed a rock music photographer, and singing the joys of Tom Petty. And needless to say, I gave a plug for your wonderful text with Tom Petty, interviews and conversations with Tom Petty. So great stuff from that point of view. And time once again is sort of beating us, so we haven't had a chance to really talk about, have you had a chance to listen to Clifford T. Ward? Have you listened to any other artists and so on and so forth? But then again, I think it's fair to say, even Laura and I would say, yeah, having a sort of Beatles dedicated system would be acceptable, given the excitement that's coming through from that. So let's go to those last two questions. Any particular Beatles number that you'd like us to use as the sort of a wrap up for today, Paul, that comes through? I mean, we've got a fair range of tracks here, from The Joys of Blackbird, a personal favourite from that point of view, Norwegian Wood, also good from that, Across the Universe, Words Are Spilling Round, Like Endless Rain Into a Paper Cup, superb, Strawberry Fields Forever, anything that you sort of say, yeah, go for that one.
Well, you mentioned what's probably my favorite Beatles record and track, Strawberry Fields Forever, one of John Lennon's masterpieces, and also a masterpiece by engineer Jeff Emerick and producer George Martin, who put together two separate recordings and merged them in a brilliant, brilliant masterpiece of recording. So I don't think it gets better than that.
And when we talk about lyrics, what better than No One I Think Is In My Tree? I mean, it must be right or wrong. Surely, you know, it's almost my motto and mantra there. But still.
Indeed, that's very simple, but that spoke to our hearts. Yeah.
And those two last simple questions, please, Fergus, for Paul Zolo.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I did. It's a pleasure to talk to the Beatles, especially with people in Britain. You know, growing up in America, we were just we were in love with Britain. Anything that came out of the UK, Carnaby Street, London, the Beatles, it just seemed so much greater than anything we ever knew here. So it's a great pleasure to get to.
And you got the Beach Boys, and you got the Birds, and you got the Monkees, and you had a whole range of other factors there as well. So, and you got Bob Dylan, you know, and you got Pete Seeger. Yeah, exactly. You got Harry Chapin. Yeah, it's a musical world.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, Bob Dylan, but they were all, except for Dylan, they were all very influenced by the Beatles.
Yeah.
And then the Beatles were influenced by Brian Wilson. So it went back and forth. But to us, it was just out of our world to see the Beatles and just how funny they were. It was to this day, it was thrilling.
Awesome. Final question.
Will you be joining us again very soon?
Will you come back, Paul Solo? Come back, Paul Solo. Come back. Come back. Sorry, I'm having a Shane moment there for a moment, Paul. You know, come back, Shane. Come back. Will you be back with us?
Happy
on the
to come
drive?
Back anytime.
Excellent. Paul Solo.
Happy to come back anytime.
A round of applause for Paul Solo, please.
Thank you. I just wanted to quickly.
Yes?
Okay.
No, go on. What would you like to say?
Okay. They mentioned George Harrison being great. The truth is, he didn't get to do a lot of his songs in the Beatles. So I think his All Things Must Pass, his first solo album, maybe the greatest solo album by any Beatle. So, yeah, they all did great work.
Well said, very Paul. So. Well said. Cue Strawberry Fields.
Let me take you down.
clearly, if I'd been on the game, I would have actually squeezed in a Robin Pierce ident whilst they're going round the hill before they actually come back around out of the hill again and come back now as if by magic, because, you know, they haven't gone away really. But in this reality, in this dimension, that wasn't to be. Only because we can actually welcome the awesome lead writer from Starburst magazine back with us in no matter of marvellous ways, although this time he hasn't been able to listen to the show, so all we can really do is, it's all right, he'll have his time machine to listen to the full Midweek Drive podcast when it's online, which probably you're doing now, dear listener, because let's face it, it's the only way, unless you're in the studio, you can listen to us at present. Robin Pierce, welcome back to...
Hello there! Now, have those four Scousers gone for good this time? Because they keep coming back.
They just keep coming back and back and back and back. And it's almost... You know, even now, I think there might just be a slight...
Lead writer for the world's longest-running magazine of sci-fi, horror and fantasy. Host of Piercing the Veil, regular Stone Tapes and Midweek Drive contributor, and the UK's very own Welsh Caped Crusader. Tis time for Robin Pierce.
No, Fergus. No, not Star Trek. Not Star Trek.
On tonight's show... Submitted for your approval, one tired old sci-fi magazine hack writer without a single note of anything that has gone on before.
Oh.
He sits in his study, clueless. He is on a one-way trip to the Twilight Zone.
Ah,
or, put another way, do you remember that old sweet song, Blockbuster?
Yeah.
Mm. Uh-huh.
I just haven't got a clue
what to do. Superb. Let's do a little bit of sad news first, because clearly I pick up my monthly edition of the world's longest-running magazine of sci-fi, horror and fantasy, Starburst. I think the Tarantino issue, yeah, very good, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, The Dark Side of Tinseltown, Pan's Labyrinth, Cliff Martinez, and so on. Check out clearly the work of Ed Fortune, and obviously Kieran Moore, and of course the editorial that's there. I don't see any Robin Pierce in here, it's dreadful.
No.
There is.
Is there?
Where,
Robin?
Yes. You look in that review column and you check out who reviewed the original soundtrack to the 1980 Prom Night. That would be me.
Wow.
No, I didn't have a feature article.
Clearly. No, exactly. Well, this is the key thing. Well, that's quite all right. We shall work through that, because, of course, as well as the notion of... I mean, let's ask our film buff here, and indeed postgraduate soul, etc., Fergus... Quentin Tarantino, are you a fan? Is it a case of, I'm back in the day of my early teaching career at the University of Lincoln, one of the things I set up was a trip to for some of our students in the contemporary issues in textual communications strands to actually see in Sheffield, actually, Tarantino's Pulp Fiction, when it was really very hot and very exciting, and he'd just come off the back of the excitement of Reservoir Dogs and so on. I mean, this year, of course, you got a trip to the Odeon to see Captain Marvel, so it all works on that basis, but... What about Tarantino for yourself?
You can tell from his films that he's a huge fan. Mm. He's a fellow film buff. Like, he used to work in a Blockbuster or a video rental store. And you can see he picked up all these things like exploitation films, which is featured very heavily in like Django Unchained and Inglourious Bastards.
Mm. Inglourious, we'll find. It's okay. It's a podcast.
It's a podcast.
We can get away with that just a bit.
And Kill Bill. He's a very unique style. I think they're good films. I don't think I haven't seen all of them. No. I've seen Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, Inglourious, Django. Haven't seen Hateful Eight or Jackie Brown or Kill Bill.
Jackie Brown, I quite enjoy. Hateful Eight, yet to see.
I've heard Jackie Brown. Been hailed by some, including Mark Moders, as best one. But the issue is, he seems to be a little bit self-indulgent at times.
I feel that.
All his films, if they were cut down, because I know he does have an editor who works with all his films, if they were cut down by 20 minutes to half an hour, then you can cut out some of the dialogue and still get the point across. Then you'd probably still get the same or even a better film out of it, even though they're very good films, nonetheless.
Robin Pierce, any comeback on that as we approach August the 14th, when the ninth film from Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
In my view, Tarantino is my third favourite film director of all time. Lagging sadly behind Hitchcock at number two and Spielberg at number one. I like his work. I have to admit, I have yet to see Hateful Eight, even though I've got it here on disc. I thought that he hit the ground running with Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and Jackie Brown. I loved the first Kill Bill better than the second. I prefer the cut of Death Proof in the actual grindhouse double bill that he did with Robert Rodriguez to the kind of fully fleshed out, lengthier version that was released on disc in the UK. I thought he started to lose it a little bit with Inglourious and Django. Django?
Yeah, because I know that with Django Unchained, I know my dad's a big
fan. I thought, dude, what are you doing? And to be honest with you, it seems to me that he's coming back to greatness with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood from everything I've seen and everything I've heard. But I really don't know that he's the guy that I want to direct a Star Trek movie. I hope that's an unfounded rumour.
These are the critical lines which we will cross in another time, another dimension, because I'm looking at the clock. And Robin, I mean, listen, we have still got to talk about The Boys. Not today, though, because like yourself and Paul Mount and myself, I've reached the end of episode 4. I'm up to episode 5. Let's hold fire on that. My words so far, pretty awesomely good, particularly if you're looking at it from the point of view of a semi-satire on Donald Trump and a whole range of other factors as well in current America.
My one word so far is wow.
Yeah, there we are. So let's save that for next week, in which I'm also going to set you a bit more homework, Robin, if that's okay, because then you can also come to us next week by doing a review of what we've done in this podcast today for the last hour and 40 minutes. Yeah? So it all sits together. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Thank you, yes.
Will you be back again in 7 days' time?
I will indeed.
I think for the visuals, you could actually have Lily Holloman dancing with Phil Dennis as they actually have the frog chorus in the background with We All Stand Together. That would actually be my sort of attempt at world peace. What say you, Phil Dennis? Newly refitted eyes front, Phil Dennis in Los Angeles, California.
Yes, I mean, first of all, I didn't take offense at you describing visuals because I would now be able to enjoy them.
Yay!
Yes, it is quite the shocking realization that I am seeing better than I have in more than a decade. Painful at times because it's an intense amount of stimulus. Which is a perfect description for the midweek drive, an intense amount of stimulus.
And you haven't even heard what's been going on in the show this time around because, no. As I say, you'll have to download the podcast. Talking of which, I have to pass on, and under strict instructions to pass on, very, very best wishes to you from our rock music photographer, Nick Elliott, who was completing his 50th podcast this very day, which we're going to release in the next day or so. Sound and Country Sound and Nick's Vision, or Sound and Country Vision's Tessa Snart, that's up to episode 30. Sound and Nick's Vision up to episode 50. Chilpack Hollywood up to episode 636. And the Midweek Drive and Southside Broadcasting in general up to nearly 4,000. So, you know, we'll celebrate that 4,000 this year, Phil. In some time, I think around about October, November, it'll be our 4,000th podcast.
Well, I would tell you that you don't look a day over 3,000. Yeah. But that was because of the cataracts that made everyone younger. Oh my goodness. By the way, yeah, it was disturbing to realize that I had been looking in the mirror with a certain beauty diffusion filter built into my eyes. I thought I had such smooth, youthful skin for years, and now I have pores. I don't know where that came from, but it's the double whammy, Alex, of being able to see again clearly for the first time and not being allowed to wash my face because I can't run the risk of getting water or soap into the eyes. So it's tremendous. But congratulations on 4,000. Honestly, I never expected you to make it this far.
I haven't reached it yet, of course, Phil. I mean, lots could actually happen. Lots could actually happen in terms of that whole sort of sequence. And
hey, may I share with you, I don't know if you listened to the show this week, Chilpack Hollywood Hour, but one of the things we did was remember a wonderful actor. I know you loved his work, and it was a real joy for me getting to direct this man, David Hedison. And I watched some of his films this week just to remember him, and then that led me to watching some of the films that I can see again, watching some of the films of some of our friends who have left us, including Shane Rimmer. I was really taking an opportunity to enjoy again some of Shane Rimmer's work, and what a wonderful presence he was on screen. As I was saying, it didn't matter. I think this is why he had the career he did in the kind of projects he did, because it didn't matter how outlandish or cartoonish or comic book-ish they might be. He was always so believable.
Yep, I think that sums up Shane to a T, a Canadian actor who was the go-to soul for any American general or indeed activity when this side of the Atlantic was needed a call from. Actually, I'd qualify that by saying the late, great Ed Bishop as well, who was for many years a contemporary of Shane's and, of course, was Commander Strako in UFO and the voice of
Captain
Blue.
It always disturbs me when you say that, too, because the movie that I directed David Hedison in, a movie called Spectres, was in fact edited by someone named Ed Bishop. So every time you say that, I think, what?
I know, yeah. One is an actor, one is an editor. That's the way things go. You know, one's still living, one's still with us, one has moved on to a different dimension. And we shared certainly different dimensions. The science fiction novel that was written, and this is certainly one for the conspiracy theorists. I think we will have to keep coming back to this particular aspect that Norman Spinrad, well-known science fiction writer and author, back in the 1960s, actually produced a wonderful novel that features as its lead character a very mischievous Machiavellian soul whose name is Boris Johnson. and goes on to do with the galactic hegemony in all sorts of ways and activities. And just reading through it this week, which I've sort of taken time to actually do, Agent of Chaos is the name of the book, Agent of Chaos by Norman Spinrad. And you will find it just prefaces, it kind of prefigures.
And of course, I mean, this is probably why you referenced conspiracy theories, because there are people whose inclination then is going to be to say, oh, see, Norman knew about this, knew that the plan was already underway, and that's why he wrote about it, right? How Tom Clancy and 9/11, or the lone gunman in 9/11, this idea that writers must have been clued into these things, and that's how they knew to write about them decades in advance. And it is impressive. Dean Haglund and I have actually finalized a deal to write a remake of a very famous film. We're not allowed to discuss what it is, but it's based on a book from the 70s, and I really do believe that this writer, who is no longer with us, did see already in the 1970s developing what would surely evolve as the comedy of hate. And it's something that Dean and I have talked about a lot, and it's not something that was brought out of the novel the first time it was made into a movie, but it's there, and it speaks so much to our contemporary age, where so much of what passes as comedy is about hatred. And so it's fascinating.
Here's the opening few words from Agent of Chaos by Norman Spinrad, a quote from Gregor Markovits on the theory of social entropy. Every social conflict is the arena for three mutually antagonistic forces: the establishment, the opposition which seeks to overthrow the existing order and replace it with one of its own, and the tendency towards increased social entropy which all social conflict engenders, and which in this context may be thought of as the force of chaos. Boris Johnson stepped lightly and automatically off the outermost strip of the ground-level glideway and onto the sidewalk lip. The pristine, cold, white bulk of the new Ministry of Guardianship building bulked proud and inhuman in front of him, separated from the ground-level sidewalk by a broad expanse of lawn which completely ringed the building on ground level. I'll leave the rest for yourself, Phil, to savour in at times past, and juxtapose that with The Boys from Amazon Prime, which, again, it's so spooky it could almost be true.
Well, I see your quote and read you the following quotation, which I expect you to identify.
Whoa. No pressure.
For a time in my early 20s, I lived in Rome, traveling by steamer from Sydney through the heat of the Suez Canal, in the wake of a man I was head over heels with and whose wife was unaware of my existence. Who wrote those words?
No, is it a Philip K. Dick? It sounds Philip K. Dickian, although it could be almost Jose Farmer. Might not be Jose Farmer. It could be River World.
It is, in fact, a memoir by Annette Andre. It's Where Have I Been All My Life? It's chapter 3, and it's the first book I have been able to read in a year. And I picked up our dear friend Annette Andre's book, which you were kind enough to gift me, and what a joy to be able to read.
Excellent. Again. Well, I mean, you know, again, I did try to sort of put together a collection of wedding gifts for yourself, Emily, which I felt kind of thematically opened up a whole range of other vectors from that point of view. It's there. What can we do now? Well,
and wonderful to have, by the way, these things to look forward to. The stack of books had been mocking me for the past year, and now it's just kind of a joy to be able to, you know, I mean, it really has changed things for me to realize moving forward. You know, I need to make sure that every day I just carve out time for myself that is all about just reading. You know, as opposed to what it used to always be, which is, oh, this is the thing I do before going to sleep at night. Because it's such a joy. Such a joy.
For completists, this episode, in terms of podcast world, will be our 3,919th episode. So we've still got 81 to go before we make that 4,000. So I just wanted to make that quite clear.
Now, do you count... You're counting both Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Exactly, indeed. and indeed on, okay. on location reports, audio postcards. It's a bit like the aggregate score of yourself, Chilpack Hollywood, and indeed the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. And I think it's fair to say it's the same publishing house that's producing them. So, you know, on that basis, I think we're entitled to actually say,
I think yours are more linked. I think there is less connection between my, other than me, there's less connection between the Breakfast Club podcast and Chillback Hollywood. But so basically what we're saying is we're roughly 45 weeks away. I was told there'd be no math. But we're 40-something weeks away from you hitting 4,000.
Oh, no, I think we might do it a bit earlier than that. I think, you know, it depends on the sort of speed and rapidity that we're working through, because we're usually doing about three. Let's not worry about it. As you said, it's mathematical. We don't want to get too confused about that. And in the same way, as I'd say, just as Stan Lee Presents was used so much as the masthead of the Marvel Comics, I think Phil Leonis Presents is also a kind of... imprint of class that you actually get there, you know, kind of, you know,
podcast. That's
you know?
Hilarious. And like Marvel, I think we're just about 9 months or 40 weeks away from them releasing their 4,000th superhero movie.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, or possibly Chilpack Hollywood Hour will actually be taken over by Walt Disney. So, you know, the circle will be complete then. You know?
I can't wait. I am dying to be bought as a human being by the Disney Corporation. I don't know what's taking them so long.
Well, I mean, already...
I would be an excellent thrill ride, I think. So,
we'll start the campaign now. Just as we were talking about Tarantino and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that's all on previous packages that we're working through. And astoundingly, Fergus, we've reached that stage in the programme where we need to ask Phil those last two questions. I mean, actually, you say that, but I suppose we could go on. We could go on for another 24 hours and just carry on. No. We'll keep it to our time. You know, we won't be flabby in terms of our timekeeping, even though, as I say, this is not going out, as we've announced via FM, hence the reason we can actually talk with our Canadian author Miranda O about chin up, tits out. That's it. Last time I'll say it on the program. I know. Yeah,
what?
Exactly. Yeah, I'll just leave that hanging there.
That gets edited, right?
If it were live, yeah, it'd have to be. But in this particular case, I'm leaving that little baby in because of the motivation factor.
I am not going to get bought by the Disney Corporation with that kind of foul mouth.
Exactly. I know, but, you know, as I say, hence deep breath from that point of view and rejoinder. Fergus, over to yourself.
Okay. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I didn't even get to really chat with you, Fergus. I'm curious as to how your experience in podcast-only production went today.
I'm still a bit new to the podcast scene. I've done a couple of them. I did one the other week, mm-hmm. which is theatre-based, you know. Mm-hmm. Be a couple coming up, you know, couple of film reviews, you know, you have to check out for that. But it's different to live radio being on the FM.
And yet, is it, really?
It's not much of a different show compared to the regular, mm-hmm. but I think with this one, it's like there isn't, you know, been able to be
who normally listen to us, who normally pass comments, like Phil Linus used to do in the days pre-2014, where regularly he'd actually put, you know, various sort of Facebook posts up saying listening to the Midweek Drive. Then he got whisked away by the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. It became much more challenging to do that. These days we just give thanks to the good Lord that he's able to join us for about 1,200 seconds.
It turns out, Alex, that I wasn't making those Facebook posts. It was Russians trying to interfere in podcasting.
And that was
too soon.
And that was all predicted in a book by Annette Andre back in the 1960s. No, I'm kidding.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
So I've had an enjoyable podcast experience.
And
will you be joining us again next week, or be it live or on podcast?
The irony is that some of your audience will hear me next week before they hear this one. That's the irony of podcasting. Right. Yeah.
Thanks to Anna Lewis, William Coles, Miranda O, Zoe Jameson, Rachel Abbott, Paul Zola, Robin Pierce, Phil Leonis, Fergus Jeffs, and you, dear listener, in the universe of podcasting. Tomorrow it's Yorkshire Day in England, so I know, Phil Leonis, you'll be delighted to say that that's in Los Angeles coming up to 11 a.m. So in 25 hours from now, you can in Los Angeles get out the flat caps, get out the Yorkshire puddings, say, "Ee by gum," because I know that'll go down well on Sunset Boulevard. "Ee by gum, lass." Happy Yorkshire Day. So 1, 2, 3.
Happy Yorkshire Day.
Happy Yorkshire Day.